This is More Financial Talk with Ryan Moore from Retirement Solutions Group. You need a financial strategy that accounts for challenges like market volatility and inflation, and that also adequately prepares you for retirement. The purpose of More Financial Talk is to address common financial concerns, provide helpful strategies, and offer ways you may be able to achieve your financial goals. And now here's More Financial Talk. Keep more in your pocket.
Welcome to More Financial Talk. I'm Ryan Moore, and with me today is co-host Tony Shore. Tony, how's it going up there in Minnesota?
Well, I'm fantastic. I couldn't be better. I'm so excited today because once again, Ryan, you got a huge get for the show, a very special guest, and this is a biggie. Our listeners and viewers are going to want to stay tuned for this. Because on today's show, Ryan, you have, and right here in the studio with me, I get to be here in person with him. So my day's going great. We have Tyler Ellegaard, Senior Portfolio Manager for Gradient Investments. And is that title still right? I mean, you've been moving up. You're not president yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, okay.
I don't really know what my title is.
But you are a senior portfolio manager with the company.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. And you've been doing this a while, right?
Just over 10 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
10 years with Gradient Investments, and Gradient, they have a lot of assets under management, right?
When I started, we had about 1.8 billion. And then I've been with Gradient for 8 years, and now we have just under 9 billion.
Yeah. They went from 1 billion to 9 billion after they hired Tyler. So
I hope you're getting some raises along the way there, Tyler.
Yeah, really.
I would like to say it's because of me, but in all honesty, it's not.
Well, you've managed come up with some very successful portfolios. And I mean, between you and Mike Binger and Keith Gangle and Lisa Schreiber, what a great team there. Absolutely. And there are many others, but those are the main portfolio managers and decision makers. And Ryan, you're in a really unique position for your clients and people you work with. You can just pick up the phone and call Tyler, who's actively managing these portfolios for your clients, right?
Yeah, it's a huge added value. And, you know, I've really gotten to know Tyler quite a bit over the last few years. And he may look young, but he's got an age-old intellect when it comes to this stuff. And so I love leaning on his perspective. And, of course, he's got the whole team around him and well-trained and also a CFA. You know, we tout that credential as a very big deal as a chartered financial analyst. You know, I just brought on a new advisor to the firm who's a younger fella, and he happens to be a CFA. So we're happy about having him on board. And, you know, when we talk about it, he tells us it took him 5 years to get that designation and about 3,000 hours of studying. So it's a pretty big deal. And
wow, they really
put you through the grind on that one, right, Tyler?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's I don't want to go too in deep on it because I know we have a lot more important things to talk about, but yeah, it was not an enjoy. I'll just say it wasn't enjoyable. Right. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, a little pain for the gain at the end, but probably a huge career boost as well.
Yeah, so, awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, we need to dig into our topic. You've got a lot you want to bring to us today, Ryan. We were talking before the show, and there's a lot going on out there. Where do you want to begin?
Yeah. So actually, this is kind of a follow-up. Tyler and I did a webinar for our clients last year, and we called it Gold and Digital Gold, specifically talking about precious metals and also the digital revolution, which revolves around blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, stable coins, and, you know, even AI. So I was hoping today to really tackle a follow-up on that, where some of those parts of the industry stand, and there's a lot of stuff going on kind of, you know, in the background, I guess you would say, when it comes to the digital revolution. So I want to bring some of that to the forefront. But I think unless you've had your head in the sand, everybody's been hearing about, you know, the rise of gold and silver, and, you know, Gradient has portfolios revolving around these categories, and Tyler has had his hand in the management of these over the years. And so I thought he'd be a great one to do a follow-up with on the podcast to drill down a little bit on where things stand currently. So I figured, we would touch on the gold side of things first and precious metals. And so Tyler, we've had a pretty big run up on in gold and also silver. A lot going on in the world with geopolitics and, you know, disruptions and all the things in the news. How are you feeling about the precious metal sector?
I still like it. I think you have to be picky on where you're investing your money, which is why we're actively managing that portfolio. And typically the four main metals that we invest in, number one is going to be gold. That's the well-known precious metal. Number two is silver. And then there's also two, they're known precious metals, but they're not as heavily invested in, and that's platinum and palladium. So silver has had a significant, call it 8-9 months between the volatility of the metal and also just the performance of it.
Yeah.
And we're fortunate enough to trade out of silver at the absolute peak. So the day before it had the significant drop, I think it was like 17%, 20%-ish in one day that the price of silver fell. The day before we traded out of it because we felt that the price was a little bit too rich. So I'm not as keen on silver right now because typically with silver, the way that price works is it's not as highly valued as a store of value type of metal like gold is. And the performance of silver tends to, or the price of silver tends to lag the performance of gold over time. It tends to catch up, but there's a lag mechanism. So when gold goes up, silver tends to be a little bit behind it. And also the investment case for silver at the time was gold is above its all-time highs, whereas silver wasn't. And so if you're going to hold true to that lag in performance, you want to hold silver. And so we held silver, and then it crossed over the all-time highs, and then it continued to go up a little bit, and it got caught in this momentum trade. And so we decided to get out of it, and then obviously we had the significant pullback. So I'm not as keen on silver right now, but I do think gold is actually an interesting metal to continue to hold. And the reason for that, and I don't want to take up all of your time, Ryan, but the gold is in 2022, in 2023, there was a lot of conversations around BRICS countries, which is your Brazils, Russias, Indias, Chinas, South Africas, and then there's a whole host of other, especially like Middle America and South America countries that are involved in BRICS that aren't in the acronym of BRICS. But there's a lot of discussion around BRICS and them creating their own currency. And one of the things that those countries wanted to do was have it central, but then also backed by a metal like the US used to do with gold. And so you saw a lot of central banks of those countries were buying a lot of gold and even silver for that matter, but a significant amount of their buying was in gold. And so you saw a lot of that central bank demand back in 2022 and 2023, which was the initial driver of the price. And you saw a fair amount of retail investors coming in, but not what would drive the price of gold up. So after that, you saw central bank demand start to fall off in 24 and 25, but you saw the retail investor, the flows of investments come into gold, mm-hmm. which is what we've seen in the latest drive of the price. And so the fact that you have retail investors that are very interested in it, and then central banks have tapered off their buying, but I expect them to start increasing it again. And you have global conflict. So gold, obviously being the store of value, gives you when there's global conflict, there's a lot of angst. Well, you want to buy real hard assets. And the first place that investors go to is gold. And yeah. So obviously there's a lot of global turmoil going on right now, whether that's Iran and US or Russia, Ukraine, or even the potential threat of China and Taiwan. Not saying that that's actually going to happen, but
sure.
You know, those talks ramp up under these types of global uncertainties, where China then goes and starts talking about it again, just to ramp up the rhetoric. And so all of this conflict pushes people into hard assets. So to bring it all together, I still like gold as a precious metal.
Yeah. And I think when you look at it from an asset allocation standpoint, it is considered its own asset class. And so I do think it is a nice diversifier and an inflationary hedge. And when we have a devaluing dollar, that also is a place to flock to. So I think it's good to have some in the mix. I mean, like anything else, we may not want to overly concentrate. And I think most of my clients are going to be exposed maybe from a 3 to 10% overall portfolio allocation. And it's something that's, I think, is going to be a long-term hold, in my opinion.
Which I would 100% agree with that. I think it's a good diversifying asset class. Now, the one thing I throw out there is a lot of people see, like, when you go buy physical gold, like, you're not necessarily looking at the price of gold every day, right? You might look at it every month or every 6 months or every year. You know, you have this amount of gold in your vault, and you just kind of let it ride the out over the years. But when you own gold in like a portfolio, like what we run, you see, and you log into your Schwab account, because everybody loves to log into their Schwab account.
So a precious metals portfolio.
Yeah. So, and you see the actual swings in prices on a daily basis of precious metals, and it can be volatile, but if, you know, it's more of a long-term, like you said, Ryan, it's more of that long-term perspective that you have to take on these metals.
Sure.
And last year was a great year for the precious metals portfolio at Gradient. I know past performance is not indicative of future results, but it did, was up 86% for the year. So that was a big winner. And we're greatly appreciative of that. So I'm going to do something a little different today than I typically do, but I've got, you know, some headlines and some articles that I wanted to touch base on, because, you know, as much as I value Gradient's opinion and Tyler's, I know the world's not according to me over here either. So interestingly enough, BlackRock came out with an article just yesterday, and the title of it was "Gold and Silver Bull Market Far From Over, New Demand Reshaping the Market." And so basically, they stated yesterday that despite recent volatility in precious metals, the long-term uptrend for gold and silver remains intact, fueled by shifting demand that's reshaping the market. This comes from an analyst, Christy Akulin, head of America's iShares investment strategy at BlackRock. And by the way, BlackRock's the largest money manager on the planet. And she mentioned that, you know, gold had surged over the last year about 75%, while silver had jumped 148%. And to continue, it says pullbacks haven't dented the demand in the overall bull market. And the key drivers include global debt burdens. So the U.S. federal debt now exceeds 120% of GDP. Major economies like Japan, UK, France, and Canada all have debt levels of above 100% of GDP, boosting gold's appeal as a store of value. Geopolitical uncertainty, ongoing tensions have spurred hedging demand for precious metals. Industrial demand, this is where I think silver comes in. 60% of consumption of silver comes from electronics, solar panels, and semiconductors, with AI computing growth, data center builds, and electrification set to lift demand further. Central bank buying has also been a critical catalyst. And so by 2025, gold share of global reserves surpassed U.S. treasuries for the first time. And even as we start to segue into digital gold, stablecoin issuer Tether, the largest holder of stablecoins, holds 140 metric tons of gold, ranking them among the world's top 33 gold reserve holders. So gold acts as a long-term store of value, defensive asset, while silver offers higher upside during economic expansions and industrial growth cycles. And I'll close on this part by also a notable investment bank out there, JP Morgan, has a price target on gold for year end 2026 of $6,300 an ounce, which would give it another 20% upside if that forecast holds true. So I don't think it's over the run. And, you know, I think when we get some dips, it could be some good entry points as buying opportunities.
Yeah, precious metals are always interesting because they don't quite follow the rest of the market. And people get confused, I think, on holding physical gold versus a portfolio like a precious metals portfolio or a gold portfolio. So that's where you come in, Ryan. I know they need to work with a trusted financial services professional, because everybody's situation is different. And, you know, some people think they have to have physical gold in case the dollar crashes. But then I wonder, can you take a gold bar down to the gas station and you're going to shave off some, or for a loaf of bread? How is that actually going to work? So it just depends, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, I always go back to that too. It's more of like everybody values something differently, right? So right. like some people have a watch collection, or they have a sure. playing card collection, or they collect cars, right? So like everybody, so gold is more in this area of, it's not necessarily going to be used for like a monetary value.
Sure.
Yes, maybe someday you start using it to exchange, who knows? But to your point, like you can't really just shave off a little bit to pay for that $2 loaf of bread, because that ounce is $6,300. So it's an expensive loaf of bread. But
yeah,
it's more the store of value and the historical use of gold and what it represents for people from sure. an investment standpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you have either a doomsday yeah. approach to it, or just a asset allocation, you know, hedge against other right. things. And typically right. with our clientele, because we're not selling physical gold around here, it's going right. to be paper.
Right. Right.
And ultimately just part of the overall mix within the investment options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. You ready to shift gears and talk about digital gold or the digital revolution, which is a topic, you know, I enjoy talking about, Tyler.
Yep.
And Tyler, this is one of your specialties, right? You've worked in this area.
Yeah, I've worked
quite
in this area a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you touch on the, you know, the digital portfolio that Gradient works with specifically, and I know yeah. you're managing that.
I'd love to. Yeah. So, I mean, we have a portfolio that we call our digital discovery portfolio. It's focused on the revolution of technology, or the evolution of technology, or both. And so, you know, the pillars change a little bit here and there, depending on the new upcoming technology. But right now, the main pillars of the portfolio are, and these four have been from the beginning for the most part, blockchain, cryptocurrency, metaverse, and AI. And the one that we added as a pillar last year, as we saw the value of it, was quantum computing. But from a blockchain crypto perspective, obviously it's been a challenging space to be in over the last, I mean, even AI for that matter. When you start talking about the software service companies, I mean, it's been a tough run. But from a short-term perspective, your cryptocurrencies and blockchain companies have not performed well. There's been a lot of concern out there, and more of it is my take on it is the space in general, the use case of the technologies and the currencies, from a long-term perspective, are still there, especially the blockchain technology. Like that's here to stay. And I'll bring up a point here in a second. But from a short-term perspective, these are, even though like Bitcoin has been around since 2009, a lot of the technology and the other cryptocurrencies are a lot newer. And so when you get this environment where people are concerned about what's going to be happening with the economy, what's going to be happening globally from a global geopolitical risk, and a good example is the software stocks that have been selling off. When you have this risk, I call it risk off, meaning people don't want to be taking a lot of risk because of how volatile these newer technologies can be from a company perspective, or even just coin perspective. People tend to trade out of them and into something else that's maybe not as volatile or is deemed as safer assets,
sure.
cash, treasuries, things like that. And so that's why you start to see these sell-offs, is it kind of starts a snowball effect as it starts to go down 5, 10%. You start to have people jump in and say, well, do I really want to hold this thing now that it's down 10%? And I might as well get out too. Mm. And it just creates a snowball effect. So in these risk off environments where people want safer assets like the treasuries, that's why you start to see these pullbacks. But from a long-term perspective, I still believe very heavily in the use of blockchain. And we just got a headline, what was that, 2 days ago? Not even a headline, a press release from NASDAQ, saying that they're going to be looking at tokenizing every single stock on the NASDAQ exchange to allow for 24/7 trading, right? And that tokenization lives on the blockchain.
Yeah.
Because now you have a record of who the shareholders are. Every transaction happens instantaneously, right? So everything is going to be tokenized and living on the blockchain.
Yeah.
And so the NASDAQ exchange is going to start to do that.
Yeah. And when you talk about this and talk about blockchain, that's really the backbone or the back end, as they say, or the behind the scenes technology that allows things like Bitcoin to operate. But really, you see that becoming the backbone for currency and mm-hmm. for finance in general, right? I mean, banks are looking at this, the NASDAQ's looking at it, right? Yeah.
I mean, Ryan, I don't know if you have a headline on the top of your head.
Yeah, I got lots in front of me here, my friends. So let me jump in on this topic, okay? Yeah. So I think that ultimately blockchain is computer coding, and we run off of antiquated financial systems that are frictional and not instant transactions, right? And so that's where the evolution is heading. And like anything else, when you're facing a new industry, even like, you know, the internet early on wasn't just what it is today by any means, or, you know, things of that nature. So we had a big piece of legislation that passed last year. It was the Genius Act, which essentially was the stablecoin bill. And with that came some conflict between the banks and ultimately some of the, you know, blockchain industry, where they're allowing, there was a loophole where stable coins, which is pegged to the US dollar. So think of it as one coin, $1, backed by US treasuries. Okay. So it's, I call it a kind of like a crypto money market. Well, some of these companies like a Coinbase, where you're parking your money in these stable coins, are providing a yield that is going to be far above what you're getting by parking your money sitting in cash with the banks. So the banks, who make about $200 billion in, you know, profit on their balance sheets for money just sitting at the bank, you know, they're seeing the potential for money flowing off their balance sheets to be parked in these stablecoin locations. So as we approach this next key piece of legislation, which they've been working on for quite a bit now, called the Clarity Act or Market Structure Bill, I believe this is the next key catalyst for where everything is heading and could be the next leg up in terms of viewing this as an investment. You know, it does have bipartisan support, the Clarity Act, but the hangup is this stablecoin yield conflict between the banks and the stablecoin companies. And so they've been meeting quite extensively on this. And there are some headlines here, for example. So on February 10th, I follow this stuff quite a bit. Major banks participated in a White House stablecoin discussion. This was on Bitcoin.com. So here are some of the banks that are meeting on this: Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Bank of America, Citigroup, PNC Bank, US Bank. So with that, they're trying to come to terms on this to get this passed through. So I do think that this is a big development that needs to get across the finish line. But I think the stable coins are the real takeover. That's where the technology, I think, has more use case practicality, as opposed to a Bitcoin that's more of a store of value. So think of it like a new payment system where transactions are happening on this blockchain, smart contracts running over, you know, computer coding. There are tens of trillions of annual volume now. So this is quietly replacing, you know, credit card rails or everyday payments worldwide and becoming core financial infrastructure. Just recently in Europe, regulators greenlit a euro-backed stablecoin and exploring a digital euro on public blockchains. Latin America, over 90% of exchange volume is stablecoin-based. Stablecoins are an alternative that are becoming the new rail system for making transactional payments. Beyond that, here are some of the other headlines that I've read. So, you know, the White House staff came out with this: trillions of dollars are waiting to enter the crypto space once this Clarity Act passes, because they want to jump in, but they need clear understanding of what the regulations are before they do that. Indiana just made history. Now they just legalized in the state of Indiana, the ability to buy crypto within state retirement plans. And this was signed off by a House Bill 1042. And this was just on March 4th. Brazil is meeting to discuss a massive Bitcoin reserve, proposing to buy 1 million Bitcoin. Kazakhstan, this is on Crypto News. Central banks quietly joined the Crypto Reserve Club. That was March 6th. The next day, March 7th, Florida breaks ground with stablecoin legislation. So unfortunately, we just don't hear a lot of this on mainstream news. And I have resources that, you know, that keep me up to speed on this. And I want to share one more article that I found this to be very fascinating. And this comes from Paradigm Press, which is a investment research group, and specifically Chris Campbell. And he calls it the weekly crypto briefing on March 6th, an infestation of crickets. Basically, you're not hearing this stuff in the news. But BlackRock, the largest asset manager on the planet, they just tokenized a particular fund. You touched on tokenization, Tyler. They listed it on a major DeFi exchange and bought Uniswap's governance tokens. The world's most powerful financial institution just walked into decentralized finance, pulled up a chair, and sat down, is how he phrases it. But the Clarity Act. So Trump, in the middle of what's going on in this escalation and military conflict, stopped what he was doing to post about the Clarity Act. Basically, he wants the bill to pass immediately. So why is Trump focused on this when the world's on fire? And it has to do, and he kept citing China. So in May of 25, Hong Kong passed a stablecoin ordinance that took effect in August. It is now reviewing 36 stablecoin issuer applications expected this next month. So you also mentioned the BRICS. So when you have digital currencies that operate on the blockchain and you have maybe bad acting countries, you know, the way that we try to keep those countries in line are through sanctions and everything revolving typically world economy on the US dollar. They're trying to create a coalition and use this technology to go around sanctions and go around the US dollar. So there's a national security purpose for some of what's going on in this space as well. So it's not just about, is this going to be the next latest great technology and how can we make money at it? I think it's far deeper than that. So a clear US regulatory framework will accelerate dollar-backed stablecoin adoption globally. So the stablecoins are backed by US treasuries. So the more money that goes onto the stablecoin platform, the more US treasuries that are going to be bought to back it and ultimately will decouple us from places like China. So it runs deep. And I just think I find this stuff a bit fascinating. Even Meta, which is Facebook, is rolling out a stablecoin payment to 3 billion users across Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp over the second half of this year. That announcement just came out. Circle, which is a publicly traded company, the second largest stablecoin holder, okay, and they went public last year. They just posted revenue above 400% year over year. Stablecoin transaction volume hit $33 trillion last year. That's a 72% increase. Visa's stablecoin settlement hit $4.5 billion annual run rate. So the infrastructure is being laid at an industrial scale. And we just don't hear about this really on the main street news. And I'll just leave with one last topic, which is the tokenization. So tokenization is tokenizing real world assets like stocks, bonds, real estate, even gold. Okay, right now there's about 25 billion in tokenized real world assets. Global equities represent 110 trillion. Bonds represent 140 trillion. Real estate represents 250 trillion. The tokenization market could 10,000x and still have room to grow. So here's Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock. He has said that every asset will be tokenized. Paul Atkins, the chairman of the Securities Exchange Commission, has said that every asset will be tokenized. So every major Wall Street firm is hiring people to figure this out. So I just believe it's early adoption. But it's less speculative, in my opinion, and more inevitable just based on the technological advances and, you know, the efficiency that these new systems can bring to the table to upgrade our antiquated financial systems based on transactions. So I just threw a lot out there.
Yeah. No, I think what I would agree with what you've been talking about. And that's partly why, like, for me as a portfolio manager, when we're looking at how do we invest in this type of stuff, we're looking at more of the picks and shovels, right? So we are looking at the actual infrastructure of who is building this stuff, whether it's the banks, whether it's a technology company, whether it's your like, even if you go down the line of like the industrial type company that's building the warehouses for the actual servers that are hosting the blockchain network, that's, or not the actual blockchain network, but like the computers that are working on that blockchain network, like that's how we're looking at the universe, rather than saying, you know, I think this coin is going to be better than this coin, understanding that there's a specific blockchain behind it and certain mechanisms that make one better than the other. But generally speaking, we're more interested in investing in that infrastructure and the picks and the shovels, rather than picking this coin is going to outperform this coin and this one sucks and this one's great. So yeah, that's how we're looking at the world as well.
And I think that's ideal, because it's less about, you know, what crypto coin, but more of the underlying technology. And as a new digital revolution is upon us, you know, this is an industry that's still in incubation. And so there's a lot of room for growth here. And I love the fact that you guys, Tyler, with the digital discovery portfolio, bring it to the table so that folks can have some exposure to that without, you know, getting in an uncomfortable place, like trying to buy digital wallets and buy the actual coins or tokens. So basically, the digital discovery is made up of a basket of exchange traded funds with the underlying companies that are, you know, participating in this space. So I think there's a great opportunity for tremendous potential growth. I try to tell my clients, I'm not trying to promote a lottery ticket here by any means, but I do think having some exposure in this, and it does present, again, its own asset class. So similar to precious metals, a 3 to 10% exposure in this, depending on your appetite for volatility, could be a big winner over time. So I always try to make sure people understand that there's going to be swings in this space because it is early. But a lot of times the things that are more volatile are the things that can give you the better or the bigger outcome over time. So if you want to touch on that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's your traditional risk and reward, right? The more risk that you're willing to take, oftentimes the more reward you're willing to take. Yep. Now, the one thing with this portfolio and why we decided to use the exchange traded funds is because it is a new technology. These are a lot of newer companies or companies that are now reinventing themselves to be in this space. And so the approach that we wanted to take in this space is, rather than trying to pick which one are truly going to be the outperformers or the winners in crypto or in blockchain or AI or quantum computing, we decided to go with the ETFs, exchange traded funds, to give us a somewhat diversified exposure, right? Yeah. I mean, you're investing in this space, so all boats rise with a rising tide, right? Is that how the saying goes?
Yeah.
So like when things are great in the space, all the companies do well.
Yep.
And then when things go bad, a lot of them can do bad, but giving us a diversified approach to it so that we're not riding or dying with one specific company. So yeah, that's why we're using that. But yeah, I mean, it truly is a volatile space just because it is so new, and trying to give it as diversified as we possibly can, all while with the focus on what are the new technologies that we can actually invest in.
Yeah.
Well, I can nerd out on this stuff all day, but I know we don't have all day, right, Tony?
right. We should probably wrap it up. But yeah, that digital discovery portfolio is great. And for some people, it's well worth looking into. And Ryan, I know you can give our listeners and viewers more information on that and whether it fits their personal situation. So before we go, and you can even put them in touch with Tyler. I think that's fantastic. But before we go, let our listeners and viewers out there know how they can set up that no charge consultation with you and the team there.
Sure. Well, you can call our office, area code 615-467-6300. And also email our office at info@rsgtn.com, or simply check out our website at rsgtn.com. And Tyler, thank you so much for your time today, and always love picking your brain. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Great show, guys. Interesting stuff, talking about gold and the digital portfolio and a digital update. Great to have Tyler Ellegaard, Senior Portfolio Manager from Gradient Investments, with us today. And of course, our host, Ryan Moore. And that does it for today's episode of More Financial Talk.
Thank you for joining us for more Financial Talk. Don't head into retirement without a strategy that addresses both income and taxes. For more information, please contact Ryan Moore at Retirement Solutions Group at 615-467-6300 or visit rsgtn.com. Join us again soon for another episode of More Financial Talk. Keep more in your pocket.
Advisory services are offered by Retirement Solutions Group, Inc., an investment advisor. Insurance products and services are offered independently through Ryan Moore and Greg McGee, sole proprietors. All matters discussed during the show are for informational purposes only. Each individual situation may vary, and the opinions expressed here may not apply to everyone. Materials presented are believed to be from reliable sources, and no representations can be made as to its accuracy. All ideas and information should be discussed in detail with one of our qualified representatives prior to implementation. We are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration, the Federal Medicare Program, or any other government agency. Calling this number will direct you to a licensed sales agent.